come, there's a piece of paper before you, and I can see you put your own pen. After you have written to that piece of paper, when you walk out, please take your notes with you. There's a bottle of water there. I don't see the glass. They will bring the glass now for you so that you can have the clean glass. Members will be asking you questions. Honorable members will be asking you questions. Please don't hesitate if you didn't capture the question accordingly. Members are mostly willing to repeat themselves. We will introduce ourselves within a space of 2 minutes. I'll ask for my right, honorable, my right member.
Thank you, honorable chairperson. Good morning, Ms. Suzanne.
Good morning.
I'm Suzanne. So I want to declare this is just the name, it's not the same name. I'm not related, so I'm not going to excuse myself out of this. I've seen that in your CV, you've been with the commission from the 1st of October 2011 to date, although it has expired. If you remember it very well, when you came into the office, there was some work that was done by the public service regarding the 2010 Section 100 that was given to Limpopo, and there were reports that they were written as recommendations that were supposed to be done by the commission itself to the Limpopo. Can you tell the panel exactly if you can remember those reports and what did the commissioner or the commission do to execute those recommendations? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tuwanda. As they ask their questions, they will introduce themselves. Over to you, ma'am. No. It's for her to respond. Because she has introduced herself and she asked the question, hence I'm making this point so that you are no confusion.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and members. The question that the Honorable Member is asking about the Section 100 intervention for Limpopo, it's a process that happened before I came to the Commission, but I did get the report and the update of how far they were. What happened is that it was requested from the Public Service Commission to avail professionals, officials of the Public Service Commission to serve in the committee that was working with Limpopo. I remember there was a treasury involved in that committee, DPSA, so they wanted officials to be part of that. But when we followed up about the role of the Public Service Commission in that process, because we were not happy that the Public Service Commission would actually be hands-on, because they were supposed to actually monitor what would come out of the work that would be done there. Later on, I think maybe 2 months after I arrived at the Commission, we were told that the officials of the Public Service Commission are no longer required to serve in that committee because there would be no role for them. What we will do as the Commission is to monitor what would come out of that report in terms of the... there were a lot of irregular appointments that were done during that time, and it was revealed in that report that there were also irregular appointments and there were interventions that needed to be carried out by the province itself in terms of disciplining those that were actually implicated in the report. So what happened, the Limpopo office, the Public Service Commission of Limpopo, kept on monitoring, but some of the cases were actually dragging, but there was actually nothing that came back to the Commission to say some of the recommendations were not going to be carried out by the province itself. So I think from our side as the Commission, that's where the report ended.
It's a follow-up, ma'am.
Yeah. Now, you are a commissioner, and you are appointed to to make sure that there's effective and efficient services. And you are saying in your CV, one of your tasks were to monitor and evaluate. When the reports were dragging and dragging and dragging and dragging, what was the intervention? You as the commissioner, what was your intervention?
Thanks, honourable member, for that follow up. But when you look at the constitution, we have provincial commissioners that are supposed to be hands on in terms of following up with anything that happens in a province, because they have those powers. Although we operate as a single commission, but we rely on those reports. I know that some of the cases were actually finalized and some people resigned from those that were implicated. Some were actually dismissed by the department. But as I'm sitting here, I cannot vouch and say each and every case that was mentioned in the report was dealt with in terms of making sure that everything was done, but it was being followed up by the provincial office in Limpopo.
Thank you, ma'am. Honorable Dombe.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Gamama Dalan Dombe. I'm not related to Zimande. I'm not related.
This is Suzanne.
Yeah. I'm just mentioning prior. There's a Zimande coming here. Who is the Dombe? So saying I long is and she's late long. Upset. yeah, it's a declaration. My question, the PSC has a constitutional mandate to promote the values and principles of Section 195 of the Constitution. Questions are, what is your understanding of the values and principles enshrined in Section 195 of the Constitution? And please mention few and elaborate, not all, just a few. And briefly, what is your understanding of the functions of the Public Service Commission? And I'm also very interested, Masizan, in knowing that, in your opinion, at the present moment, how can you rate the current PSC in terms of its service delivery expectations?
Thank you, honourable member. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Dombela. And I think the promotion of the basic values and principles governing public administration is mentioned as the first function that the Public Service Commission should do. And what the Public Service Commission is required to do is to promote those values throughout the public service, not in the public administration, in the public service, in the provincial and national sphere of government. And my understanding of those values is that they are actually there to make sure that the public service functions effectively and efficiently. And I think that's one of the values that the public service needs to monitor, make sure that the services that people are getting from the public service are efficient. And also, one of the value is to look at the economic use of the resources that the public service is using. Maybe I can mention an example there. For instance, if they are procuring services, they are supposed to make a comparison. That is why it is required of them to actually either put out a tender or get quotations, and make sure that they are not wasting the resources, because the resources are actually coming from the taxpayer. It's not their money. They don't generate any income of their own. It's the resources that come from the people of South Africa themselves. So the public service must actually promote that they don't waste money. That is why the Public Service Commission would be concerned when they put officials on suspension while they are paying those people. They pay people that are sitting at home, and we as the Public Service Commission, we should view that as wasteful expenditure, because it, the time the person is supposed to be sitting on suspension is prescribed. When it exceeds that time, then it means the resources are not being, kept the way they should. And another one, I think it's one of the important value that the Public Service Commission has done a lot of work around it, is the issue of human resource, the human resource, which talks about so many things within it. In fact, the public human resource in the public service, it's actually loaded in that it talks to issues of recruitment, it talks to issues of transfers, it talks to issues of dismissal within the public service. And while it talks to those issues, it must make sure that the public service regulate the space to an extent that when they recruit within the prescripts, they make sure that they get the best candidates. Maybe that value and basic principle will also talk to the other one of economic use of resources. Because if they recruit someone who cannot deliver, then it means they are wasting money, because that person will be appointed in the public service, but the person cannot do the work. Another important basic principle is the one of service delivery. Honorable members will recall that we did a project on service terminations and pension payouts, where people would wait for years waiting for their pensions to be paid out. We dealt with a case, I think one case, where a person waited for 10 years, waiting for the public service to pay out the pension when the member had died. And there was also another case in KwaZulu-Natal where a member was killed in service, SAPS, was killed in service. But it took 5 years for the public service to actually deal with the pension payout. So it's a value that is there in the Constitution, that the Public Service Commission must make sure that services are provided to people in an efficient and effective manner. So you ask yourself the question, if it takes 10 years for the public service to pay out pensions, is that service efficient or effective? It is not. That is why the Public Service Commission would come in and actually do some projects that would actually assist the public service in making sure that they regulate their space and they make sure that they deliver. And in some cases, the public service would use some entities other than the department itself. The department itself, like in this case that I've just mentioned, they would use entities like the GPA, the Government Pensions Administration Agency, to actually do the work. Mm-hmm. And we always ask questions as the Public Service Commission, why are you keeping money of unclaimed pensions? What efforts have you made to make sure that you trace those beneficiaries and make sure that they get their money? So those are the values that I've just mentioned.
And the very few, and then I think the honorable member is satisfied with
okay.
the response. Thank you so much.
Let me read. Okay.
Yes. The last important one that you want to raise, that will appetize us.
The honorable member said I must also rate Public Service Commission. Maybe at a scale of 10, I would rate it at 9 now. Let me qualify this. The Public Service Commission, while it actually made efforts to make sure the public service space is regulated, in the past it failed to regulate itself. The commissioners in the Public Service Commission had no written conditions of service. They were doing what they actually copy from the public service while they are not employed in terms of the Public Service Act. So what the present Public Service Commission did was to come up with a document, a handbook of the conditions of service, which when I left the commission was already submitted, to make sure that they regulate their space. We cannot afford a situation where a commissioner would just be on leave, but we are not sure how many days is this person taking, and how many days, and if the commissioner is sick, how can we deal with the exit strategy of that sick member? They were operating in a vacuum, so to speak. The Public Service Commission also amended the rules the rules that are regulated in terms of Section 11 of the PSC Act, to make sure that there's legislation that they push through Parliament so that some of the gaps can be addressed. And honourable members are really very aware of those interventions that are coming. We also, the Public Service Commission also tackled something that hasn't been attended to by the Commission since it started in 1999, the issue of Section 219 of the Constitution, of how the conditions of service of the commissioners are regulated in terms of remuneration and things like that. So they were treated like civil servants, so to speak. So there were interventions that were pushed through the Department of Justice by the Commission. Another one was the amendment of the grievance rules. You know, honourable members, how I wish you could have time. I know your hands are always full because of the work that you are doing to make laws. But I think it's something that the members should really come close to the issue of the grievances of the civil servants that the Public Service Commission is dealing with, which the Commission actually amended even the rules that they made. You know what they did? In 1999, they started trying to gazette the rules which were published in 2003. They were regulating the public service space, and I strongly believe that it was irregular, it was wrong for the Public Service Commission to regulate, because that's not its job, that's not its constitutional mandate. While they prepared the grievance rules, they were stuck because they couldn't take it to the bargaining council. They had to make sure that they give it to DPSA so that they can present it to the bargaining council to agree on. But the Public Service Commission now managed to gazette its own rules, regulate its own space, even opening up for condonations where the person is out of time, the 90 days of being aware of the omission from the side of the employee. So those grievance rules, I'm sure the members have seen them, because they are now gazetted. So I think those are the successes of the Public Service Commission, and that is why I'm rating it at 9 out of 10. Thank you, Honourable Member.
Honourable Sengwa.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. My name is Nkola Wahlem. One of the major issues now which concerns public service, whether through perception or in fact, but an idea that is just generally there, is the issue of political interference in the discourse and the operations of public service and the administration. And so, how can these causes be eliminated? And from an experiential point of view, having been in the space, what you consider to be the causes of this, but most importantly, how this can be kept with the perception or uncorrected becomes a reality or enlightens and emboldens that reality that is already there. So if you could just take us through your views on the issue of political interference in the space, how we can eliminate it.
Thank you. Ms. Susan.
Thank you, Honorable Sengwa. You used a word, interference, but maybe I would talk to it, but I would want to present it differently. In terms of Section 3 of the Public Service Act, the powers that I think you're referring to are those powers that are prescribed in Section 3 of the Public Service Act. Those powers are powers of the executing authority. So when an official of government says to me, my minister is interfering, I always say, no, your minister is intervening, is not interfering, because those are his or her powers. That is my attitude. But tell me what the minister is doing that now you believe that the minister is interfering. Then the people will tell you what the minister is doing. And sometimes you find that it is the space of recruitment where the officials would believe that there is some sort of interference by the EAs. Let me propose measures to this committee, because the committee is the only one that has powers to change that. If honorable members feel that they want to take those powers away from the EAs, then you would need to amend Section 3 of the Public Service Act. But the interventions that the public service came up with, together with the DPSA, and I'm glad because DPSA even issued a directive to make sure that this happens, is to make sure that there are delegations. Because some departments would actually complain to say, it is difficult to fill vacancies because you must wait for the minister to do ABCD, even at lower levels where you would believe that you want to fill the vacancy urgently, but you need to wait for the minister because there are no delegations. And you find that at the level of director up in some departments, especially provinces, I think provinces are culprits in this, they don't really delegate the powers even at a very low level where you find that the ministers are there. That is why officials in government feel that there's a lot of interference. But my view is that it's not really interference. It's intervention by those ministers, or they are trying to, you know, exercise their powers themselves without sharing those powers with those that they have employed. So I am of the view that something can be done if members feel that something that needs to be addressed, amend the act, and make sure that there's compliance in terms of the delegations, which the PSC is doing. I know that before I left the Public Service Commission, there was some form of MNE that Commissioner Nzimande, in her space that she was managing, was trying to follow up with the departments to say we needed to send a questionnaire out to departments to tell us how many departments have implemented the directive of DPSA in making sure that the delegations are in place. You find that, Honorable Slengwa, this problem of not delegating also has a negative impact in terms of not filling vacancies on time by departments. They don't meet the prescribed period because ministers are busy. They cannot be expected to be sitting every day attending to each and every employee that needs to be employed. So I think my take would be that in answering your question. Thank you.
Thank you so much, ma'am. Honorable Waste Hazen.
Thank you. Did you have it on a Waste Hazen? Good morning, ma'am. The National Development Plan speaks about the developmental state, and for that we need public service with particular qualities. What do you believe is currently hindering the public service from really helping us or supporting government in us moving towards the developmental state?
Thank you, Honourable Member.
What is needed then to transform the public service to be able to achieve what is in business?
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Let me just compare this public service with the previous public service pre-1994, because that's where you will see the differences. What is it that we are not doing now that we are supposed to be doing? First of all, previously, before one can enter the service, in fact, it's something that is still happening in other countries, a public service would actually be trained to do the work before you come in. You don't just recruit from the university. You take someone from the university, you put in a department, you ask the person to do the work, because the person will not be able to do the work. But previously, before 1994, they didn't recruit the way the public service is recruiting now, taking people fresh from school. They would first be taken to a school of government where they are trained on what they are expected to do. For instance, if you are going to be recruited in supply chain, you would be taken to the school of government where you will be trained on supply chain, not general supply chain, but the supply chain of the public service. So now it's no longer happening. You find that people come in. That's why they are unable to deliver. Maybe, Honorable Member, I can share my own experiences when I was still in departments. You recruit a student coming from, you know, from the best university, from UCT, from University of Natal or wherever. You bring the person in HR, and you say to the person, please draft for me an induction policy. The person doesn't know where to start. Has got the theory from the university, but he doesn't know. But in the past, the people were trained to do the work before they can come in. That's what the National School of Government is beginning to do now, where they are introducing the induction course so that the person can be aware how to do things. For instance, a person comes in the service today, and you expect the person to be able to write a memorandum or a CAB memo for that matter. The person doesn't know where to start. But now that they are introducing that in the School of Government, in fact, that is what is needed. And I believe that there are things that we should not have thrown away, that we've just thrown away. We should have kept those things. We should not have closed all those schools. And I once worked a long time ago, before 1994, for the Public Service Institute for Civil Service Training. I was working there. And we were developing training material there to equip the people that are coming in the service to know exactly what needs to be done before they come in. That is what is not happening now. But I am glad because I was privileged to be part of the sessions where this committee actually interrogated the National School of Government on what they are supposed to be doing and what they have started doing now. So I think we are heading to the right direction now. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable
Mother. Thank you, Chair. Morning, Susan. Yeah, no, my question will be very simple to you since you are the current commissioner.
Okay, all right.
But I just want to know as to, according to you, what might be the strategies that can be used by the PSC to make sure that the State Department appoint dedicated and competent public servants, especially in position of seniority. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. This question is very critical, and one would ask the question, why are they not doing it? Because there are frameworks out there on how they should appoint people. There is a toolkit that the Public Service Commission has developed. It's a toolkit on recruitment and selection in the public service, where they are even forced to do competence assessment before they can appoint people to make sure that the people that they appoint are suitable. What is not happening now that makes all these problems that we are faced with now, where people are recruited, they cannot perform, and departments recruit people that are not suitable in position? It goes back to the question that the previous Honorable Member asked. In the past, departments were given delegations by the previous Public Service Commission to recruit, but those powers were the powers of the PSC at the time. So they would recruit, and then after recruiting, they would submit to the Public Service Commission to actually check if all the processes were followed, all the candidates that were shortlisted actually meet all the requirements before they can approve and say, okay, fine, you can go ahead and appoint. But now those powers were taken away from the Public Service Commission. The Public Service Commission now is only dealing with addressing issues of irregular appointments. This candidate has been appointed, he's not supposed to have been appointed in the first place, and the departments are actually stuck, most of them, with people that cannot perform, because those people are actually favored by people that are inside. You hear outside there, I mean, while we are commissioners, when we are in the Public Service Commission, but we are also members of the public, we talk to people out there. People will tell you that in a certain department, if you don't know anyone, you will never be appointed in that department. So it's no longer about what skills you are bringing, but it's about who knows who in the department. That is the cause of all this. And I think the strategy that can be put in place is to have a monitoring mechanism that happens before the appointment is made. Because if you do it after, it's difficult. Actually, the Public Service Commission had issued directions in terms of Section 1964D of the Constitution, where it says we received a complaint of an irregular appointment, and then the PSC would investigate. And after the finding that the appointment was actually irregular, it was not supposed to have been done, then would actually say you must reverse that appointment. And when you reverse, you can't reverse your own decision. You have to take it to court. And now it has other legal implications, because what if the candidate was recruited from another department? What happens to that candidate? So those are the issues that the Public Service Commission is dealing with now. And I think the only strategy is to amend again. Section 3 of the Public Service Act take those powers, so in that they are exercised elsewhere, so that when the department deal with the internal issues of checking and selecting, but the final appointment should actually happen after those processes have been verified by an outside body that everything is above board. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Zalma.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much. I'm Wilma Nieuwoud-Drogen, and voicing for me is Armand Kleinsch, which is my sign language interpreter. Thank you. My question relates to financial disclosure. Could you please explain to us how financial disclosure works? We have a challenge with the rate of compliance. If you are to be appointed, how will you ensure compliance from all the departments, especially compliance to financial disclosure of senior appointments? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Over to you,
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. I think this question is linked to a contribution of the Public Service Commission towards the protection of corruption in the public service. It talks to an issue of protection, because the Public Service Commission cannot be involved in the actually combating of the corrupt activities. So the only protection that the Public Service Commission can do is to make sure that senior managers disclose their financial interests. It doesn't even end with senior officials, commissioners themselves must actually declare their own financial interests. The reason why it is important for this to happen, especially for senior managers, is to make sure that people, when they work in the public service, they are honest. And when they get their salaries, they are not living above the salaries that they are earning. They are able to declare if there is any income that they get outside of the work that they do. So these financial disclosures are very important in that it is very easy for departments to actually pick up if someone is doing other things that are not in line with the work that the person is doing. For instance, if a junior official in the public service, we find people like that. This person is an assistant director, but he is owning four properties, over 2 million, having a fleet of about four or five cars. And you don't know, when you look at the salary of this person, you don't know how this person could afford what, in fact, the houses that he owns. So these financial disclosures are very important for them to be able, in fact, for the department itself, to be aware if the person is actually honest and is not accepting bribes and other things. So the level of compliance, as the honorable members as actually said, sometimes it is not as good as we expect, because the departments themselves are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. Because they're supposed to file with the Public Service Commission at a specified time. And when they file after that time, you find that the Public Service Commission has already reported on the level of compliance. And if you comply later, then it means it's as good as if you haven't complied. So what I think the Public Service Commission will have to do to make sure that departments comply is to actually make the requirement of financial disclosures be earlier than the month that we are giving right now, so that we are able to have time to monitor before the closing date. Because sometimes you find that when people are employed, within 3 months of getting employed, there are so many other things that they are required from them, like the performance agreements and things like that. But if the financial disclosure is done earlier than those processes, so it is easier for the Public Service Commission to actually scrutinize, because it's not only about filing, it's also about scrutinizing those financial disclosures and check if there is potential conflict of interest or is direct conflict of interest, which I think is something that can be done. And that's the only intervention that I can propose, is to actually shift the time that the PSC is putting now to make it earlier, so that the PSC can have enough time to scrutinize and report. Because members of parliament would want to see that report early in the year, so that they can be able, before they close, for instance, for the year, they are able to round off and call all those departments that have a high number of officials that do not comply. And I think that would what I would propose. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much, Ms. Susan, from my side. Having given us all the responses and the good work, so to say, that has been performed by Public Service Commission, what would be your own individual value add, different value add, if you are fortunate enough to be appointed? Unfortunately, in terms of your responses, you didn't indicate what role did you play in terms of championing some of those interventions, hence the question is coming. Okay.
I think
so that we can finish up with her, otherwise we're going to be very, because there was a movement, unfortunately. I know that is important what she's dealing with. Now that's what I'm requesting, we're addressing it. Ndiyacela sana sigqibezelela siya interviewer, it's quite a formal legal process. So even the time, leave the trolley, and then you sort out yourself. Thank you.
Avoided it at the beginning, because if you look at the constitution, we are a single commission and most of the work that we do is collective. But yes, you are correct, there is work that we do individually as commissioners. The way we do it is when you are a champion of a certain project that you feel very strong about it, and you come to your colleagues in the commission and say, I believe we need to do this project because of this reason. One of them is the project that was presented before you, I'm told.
Okay, can I assist you?
Yes.
The question that I posed to you, based on the responses that you have given,
okay,
is that what new value add,
okay,
that
new one
you bring, the new one?
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
The new one that I will bring will be some form of a follow-up to the project that was presented before the committee, the one of sex terminations. I've picked up a lot of things on that project that needs to be improved. in terms of the legislation. It's the Pension Act is an old act of 1996, and I started opening some discussion with the GPA to say you need to amend this act, and they needed assistance in the areas that need amendment. When I left, I was busy doing that, identifying in the act itself what needs to be amended, and I think that's one thing that I will be doing. The second one is a follow-up to a project that we did. I was part of the inspection of Portsmouth prison. Correctional center. So I'm sorry to call it a prison. I made a lot of recommendations there, and I was in pains when I left and that report was not attended, all those recommendations that were there. Correctional services, for instance, is supposed to have staff of correctional officers that are in their payroll. They are not supposed to be paying educators. They are not supposed to be paying doctors and nurses and social workers. They are unable to manage a hospital in a correctional center. I was prevented from getting into a psychiatric cell. I wanted to, because those people were actually fighting and injuring each other. Because they are kept, and those people were like saying, we don't have the expertise of running a psychiatric hospital in a correctional center. So that report is ready. There are a lot of departments that I have mentioned in that report. I have mentioned DERCO. DERCO, because there are many people from other countries that are actually making the problem that we have in our correctional centers, the overcrowding problem. And I made a recommendation. I don't know what they will say and what the members here will say, because I was like saying some of the people must be released and go and serve in their own countries. I know this is very controversial, but I've raised it. I was bold and raised it in a report. The second one was the courts. There's a resistance that is happening in the magistrate courts, even the judges themselves. There are electronic courts that are happening in all our correctional centers, but the magistrates still want people to be taken physically to the courts. They don't believe that a court can happen here while the offenders are still sitting in a correctional center. And in that report, I mentioned it specifically that they should be trained on those systems so that they can accept and actually use it. And another thing that I made a recommendation, it affects home affairs, where the issue of overcrowding is caused by a high rate of remandees in our correctional centers, because they're actually mentioning problems like interpreters. A person is speaking Portuguese, and we don't have many Portuguese-speaking people, so the people are remanded. At Portsmouth, where I was with the inspection, there were people that were remanded for over 3 years. They said, we're sitting here, we haven't been to court for 3 years because of these many problems. So in that report, there are many departments. I mentioned public works in that report because our correctional centers are very small. There is no space for recreation. So those people are locked up. They cannot be released. First of all, there are no correctional officers to actually monitor them. There is no space for them. So I would really want to make sure that that report, those recommendations in that report are actually carried out. Fortunately, I was a cluster commissioner for DPSA when I was in the commission. I engaged DPSA to say, please DPSA, can you be part of this report in making sure that the people that are employed in correctional services, the educators that are in the payroll, are taken away from correctional services and be in the payroll of the Department of Education instead. And that proposal was accepted by DPSA, and they said as soon as we engage in that report, we'll be able to do that. I would really want to see those interventions and those recommendations that in that report carried out. And another thing that I would really, honorable members, want an opportunity to make sure that it happens is the issue of unclaimed benefits. There are billions of rands that are sitting as unclaimed. When we started the project, I was, I think, on all radio stations after we released the project. And people were coming forward to say, I am here. I don't know why they said I am dead. Because I am still alive, I can still claim my pension. Yes, there will be many implications now because of the interest that are charged in the account when there are no benefits coming in and there is no claim. I would really want to see that happening because the CEO of GIPA, I promised him when I was talking to him to say, if I can get an opportunity to take you to the committee in Parliament so that we can present this report together. You can tell them why you're sitting with billions of rands of people that are still alive that you say you cannot trace, and yet those people are still alive. They were calling, talking to me on radio while I was on SAFM, saying I am alive. I don't know why they said I am dead. So I would really, really would want to see that project finish and that account being attended to in terms of paying out all those beneficiaries, especially those that are still alive. Another issue, honorable member, that I really would want is the issue of ill health retirement. There are members, especially in the police service. I spoke to a member and my heart was sore. I was in KwaZulu-Natal in one, it's called, I think it's Scott Bearer, if I pronounce the name right. Okay. Where a police officer was shot, but this person was not released from the service. He couldn't do any work, but they say, no, we must give you another work. As a result, the family would put him on a wheelbarrow to work because he couldn't walk. Those are the things that we really need to deal with if I can be given an opportunity to work with them. I've already engaged, fortunately, I was the cluster commissioner for SAPS as well. So I engaged the SAPS on the report that I'm talking about now, and I've been talking to General Pashana about it. So those are the things that need to be followed up closely. Thank you very much, Connor.
Thank you so much for all your responses. Is there anything that you'd like or a comment that you want to pose to the panel?
Yes, I will put it, honorable member, even if members will say how they do it. I think the Public Service Commission would need more time of interaction with this committee, which I believe the PSC is not getting. I would want to see a situation where members of this committee actually engage with the cases one by one, the cases that the PSC is investigating. But normally when the PSC comes to the committee to present, we come and present a quarterly report. It doesn't actually talk to individual case. Sometimes you investigate a case and you actually tell the department what to do, especially the issue of directions, the issue of recommendations. And sometimes those things are not done by the department. But if the committee can actually engage on case by case, I'm sure those departments will be able to actually do what is required of them. And I think more time is required from this committee with the Public Service Commission. And I'm not going to instruct the members how they should do their work. But I think I should recommend that perhaps when you call the department, the PSC and all the entities that report to this committee, they should not be called all of them at the same time. If you want PSC must come so that you can engage. And also, I would recommend that this committee should have workshops with the PSC. And I don't think it would be difficult for the PSC to fund that workshop because it would be very, you know, helpful both for the commission itself and the members to actually understand the business of the Public Service Commission and the challenges that they are going through. And I think that would be my request to the committee. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. I think that's a valuable advice that you have put forward, and I'm sure members, honorable members, do appreciate that. Having said that, that concludes our interaction. You will hear administratively in terms of your, whether we are successful or not, or what expected due processes that you still need to undertake with us. Other than that, thank you so much for availing yourself for us for and
thank you. Bye bye. Thank you, my mother. I'm honored.